Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
In 1856, a Kentucky slave gathered her four small children and ran north to Ohio. When they were discovered, she did the only thing within her power to save her children from slavery. In her desperation, she killed her daughter.
A true Midwestern story and the inspiration for Toni Morrison's Beloved.
From Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Today, Toni Morrison's Beloved and the true story behind the book. We'll explore the cellars and secret back rooms of the Midwestern leg of the Underground Railroad.
And we'd like to hear from you with your stories and your questions at 866-255-2762. That's 866-255-2762.
Storylines Midwest. For most of the first part of the 19th century, Congress tried to find a compromise between the pro-slavery South and the growing sense in the North that slavery should be abolished. One of the laws that satisfied no one was the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. That created a law that said Northerners had to help Southern slave owners recapture their escaped slaves. There were some well-known cases challenging this, including the Dred Scott case, which we all studied about in school. But in 1856, there was one that became exceptionally famous in its day, and that was the case that would later become the basis for Toni Morrison's Beloved.
In Beloved, Setha, a former slave, lives with her daughter Denver at 124 Bluestone Road, just outside of Cincinnati. The house they live in is haunted. Setha's sons have been driven away by the ghost, and the community keeps its distance. Denver and Setha's isolation is broken by the arrival of Paul D. He's the last of the Sweet Home men. He and Setha had been slaves together at Sweet Home and have had no contact in the 18 years since Setha's escape. When he experiences the horrors of 124 Bluestone Road, he urges Setha to move on.
Come here, baby.
Setha, I'm a grown man. Nothing new left to see or do. But I tell you, it can't be easy. A young girl living in a haunted place. Maybe you ought to move.
No. No moving. No leaving. It's all right the way it is. It's all right.
You want to tell me it's all right, Setha? And that child's half out of her mind.
Hush, I say. I got a tree on my back. And I ain't in my house. And nothing in between but the daughter I'm holding in my arms. No more leaving. No running from nothing. You hear me? I will never run from another thing on this earth.
Oprah Winfrey as Setha and Danny Glover as Paul D. in the movie adaptation of Beloved. Paul D. stays and drives the ghost away, but not for long. A stranger arrives, a young woman with no past and no name. She calls herself Beloved. She's come to seek the love she was denied by her death and to seek revenge. Throughout the course of the book, we discover the horrors of Setha's past, a past that led her to kill her daughter.
Although Beloved is her fifth novel, it was the book that won Toni Morrison the Pulitzer Prize, and it made her the well-known figure that we know today. And then in 1993, when she became the fourth and most recent Midwestern writer to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, the committee summarized her as a writer who, in novels characterized by visionary force and poetic import, gives life an essential aspect of American reality. And then in the lecture she gave when she received the Nobel, she said, "Language can never pin down slavery, genocide, war. Nor should it yearn for the arrogance to be able to do so. Its force, its felicity, is in its reach toward the ineffable."
It's Storylines Midwest, and here today to help us understand the importance of Toni Morrison and of Beloved is John McCluskey, Jr. He's a professor of Afro-American Studies and English at Indiana University and a novelist in his own right. We'd also like for you to join our conversation with your questions at 866-255-2762. That's 866-255-2762. Hello, John.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
John,
And looking forward to talking about Toni Morrison as a Midwesterner, which normally doesn't get done.
Good. It should get done more. She herself claims to be a Midwesterner, as she indeed is. So it's good that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
John, I want to start with what you think about this book, Beloved, is so important.
Well, It's to say it's a complex work is a truism. I think Toni reached very deep into her own memory of Ohio and her own reading of slavery in the post-slavery era. It's interesting that she does locate it in Cincinnati, just across the Ohio River. It's interesting that it's also 1873. You know, from 1865 through the turn of the century, we don't know very, very much, at least through fiction and poetry, about the African-American experience, and certainly not in the Midwest. So she has something interesting going here, the closeness to the end of the Civil War and the closeness to the South. Strangely or coincidentally enough, I was in Cincinnati last week to see a football game. And while poised high in the stadium, I kept looking out of the Ohio River and looking across the Ohio River toward Kentucky. And what intrigued me was that there was another classic and important novel, Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin, that has this horrendous scene of Eliza crossing the frozen Ohio. And it seemed to me this sort of blink of an eye, this sort of ribbon in the topography of the world divided slavery from freedom. And I think the closeness of the years and the closeness of the land, free and unfree, was a challenge. So I think the very first thing that Toni Morrison had to overcome was this 19th century closeness to the horror of the Civil War and slavery.
When we in the Midwest, when we look at that river, sometimes I think we try to feel very good about ourselves and think that river was the dividing line, and on this side of it was freedom. Is that a true picture? I mean, did the Midwest work as a sanctuary?
No, but it did give hope, particularly in the areas of work and education. It was like so much from the eastern seaboard when slaves escaped north. They thought of New England as that sort of city on the hill where they would be free. But it took a great deal of struggle for that to happen. The charge of the Morrison novel is the fact that the Midwest becomes a land upon which the horror of slavery and the Civil War have to be worked out. In other words, it was sort of the space. It could not happen in the South. There was not that that space. There was a settlement near Cincinnati, so there was a legacy of an African-American community. And so it's in that land where the slaves who had freed themselves now have to claim their freed selves. And that's a conscious act. That means building a community. And that's what I think is at the heart of this particular novel.
Now, Beloved describes slavery in a very graphic, a very powerful way, but there's also a great deal of the supernatural involved in the book. What do you think that Toni Morrison was trying to accomplish with that supernatural aspect of the book?
Well, it probably throws most readers off the first time you come upon it, and you say, well, this has more of a role in a science fiction text than one that's historical. But I think one of the issues she was trying to deal with was something in some ways African, in some ways ancient to humankind, and that is that the those who die, who go before us, can have an impact on the real world. In other words, that the dead never leave, that they're alive, and they shape the way we think about ourselves. The memory never dies, and we're continually trying to shape it and mold it so that we can move forward. She is clearly saying what many major writers have said, that you cannot go forward by simply evading the past, and you somehow have to struggle with it and make perhaps a temporary peace with it before you can go on and claim your own life and your own freedom. So from that standpoint, I think she was on the mark in doing something that most historical novels would not dare to do.
Do you think that in some ways the supernatural aspects of the book made it easier for readers to grasp the very real horror of that experience of being a slave?
No, perhaps on the third reading. it's not easy because we're all carrying around our presuppositions about how fantasy works in the literature that we know, how futuristic kinds of leanings work in the literature that we know, how sometimes cartoonish things work. It might work in a large novel, in a cartoon, but not necessarily in a large novel. Like Beloved. But I think as we embrace it, and I'm talking about the book now, I'm not saying much about the film right now. I mean, that's not a problem, but I'm focusing on the book now. It seems to me it takes an aggressive and adventurous reader to be able to nail the force of the supernatural with the realistic details of slavery.
When you teach this book, I assume you've taught this book, do your students get that? Do your students go along for that ride?
We join hands and take the ride together. I try to provide safety nets, but I'm surprised each time I go back to the book with what I've connections that I've missed. And students, they all have their favorite sections. It's difficult to step back and sort of digest this novel whole, and everyone will have almost like the piece of a puzzle, a certain section that they can almost recite by the time we finish discussion of the novel. But it is a challenge.
You're listening to Storylines Midwest, and we're talking to John McCluskey about Beloved and about the history of African Americans in that time period. We'd love for you to join our conversation. You can do that by calling 866-255-2762. The number again, 866-255-2762. John, I want to talk to you about this community of women that we see in Beloved, this community of women unrelated to one another who really support each other, and the fact that men in many ways seem to be extraneous to this picture. Do you think that that's a true reflection of history?
Well, I grew up in Middletown, Ohio. It's only a half hour from Cincinnati. And of course, I have lived in a different historical period. But I know something vaguely about the community of women just from the neighborhood in which I grew up. And the town in which I grew up in was a town which had at its center a steel mill. And the men would go off to do the shift work in the mornings, and they'd come back at a certain time in the evening. The women, some of whom worked, but many of them who worked in the homes, did form a community that was a little bit different when the men were around. It would still be a community, but the stories that were traded were a bit different. So it didn't mean that the men were extraneous any more that when men got together and told their stories, the women were extraneous. It's simply that based on gender, based on work, the rhythms of work, they could say some things more easily among one another than they could sometimes in mixed company.
When you said you heard these stories, I mean, did you grow up in that situation, hearing stories that would go back to the 19th century or even further?
Not really. Our town was settled by, in the 1920s, at least in terms of African-American settled population, from migrants from rural Georgia. And so many of these families knew one another in the same rural counties in Georgia and happened to move up in the same town and settle on the same streets. So they could take me back to that particular period of interracial violence, for example, but they could also talk about the sweetness of growing up in the country and growing their own crops and owning the land and manipulating the land and sort of needing the land. And that was important for me. When I came across Morrison's Song of Solomon, when she talked about a woman with no navel, a woman who almost seemed to glide through the pages of that novel, that was no shock at all. That reminded me of my aunt in Detroit. She had the same kind of storytelling quality. She walked as if she were a foot off the ground, but she was very. If someone became ill, she knew how to solve their particular problems. But at the same time, she was the one we would go to tell the stories of the violence in the South. So many of the figures, I guess what I'm saying is that in both Song of Solomon as well as in Beloved, though the stories I heard did not relate directly to the Reconstruction period, I did get glimmers of it.
866-255-2762 is the number to call to join our conversation. And Pat is on the line in Detroit. Hello, Pat. Pat, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Well, you seem to be breaking up a little bit. Are you on a cell phone?
I am on a cell phone. Yeah, it does that.
Okay, well, see if you can get your question out for us. And
okay, I think I mentioned to you that U.S. history.
Actually, Pat, I'm sorry. You're breaking up too much. I hope you can call us back and let us know what you wanted to share with us. Let's go to Heather in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Heather.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here on the line.
All right.
I'm an associate professor of English literature at Eastern Michigan University, also an African-American woman, and I grew up in Akron, Ohio, just down the road from Toni Morrison's native Lorraine. And I want to say first and foremost that in her writing, she does capture it, the smells, senses, tastes, very authentic feel for what Ohio might have been like in the time. I recognize it very intimately when I read her. But I wanted to speak very briefly to the question of the supernatural. I teach Beloved in my courses every semester. I've just finished it this last week. And I make the correlations between what we know of African ancestral worship, particularly in the West African area from which most slaves were taken, and the fact that the concept of the ancestor, of the dead family member who remains present in the African American community, is very much the driving motivator behind Beloved's presence in the house. And when she is dishonored by Paul D, or exorcised and chased out of the house, she has no choice but to take a human form, almost a possession, a spiritual possession, and to arrive in human form on the doorstep at 124 Bluestone Road. When we really take a close look at Beloved, what we see is that much of what goes on in the novel, from the naturalistic worshiping that Baby Suggs carries out, right down to the extended communities which are formed and which break up throughout the text, are pure West African culture. And I try very hard to get students to understand that this is Morrison's way of talking about the African that still lives inside of the African-American community at present. That's my comment.
Great. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
Well, John, Heather has a very interesting take on that. How do you respond to her interpretation?
I think it's a wonderful observation. It's sometimes difficult to categorize a full West African because we are talking about a continental grouping. But I think if we abstract from that, we can begin to come up with generalities, which I think work. And I believe that the notion of the living ancestor is a very vital one. That operates not only in terms of Nigerian and Ghanaian cultures, but also in the American South, when, again, they were reinforced or enhanced and then ultimately brought to the Midwest. So I think it's a very good observation.
John, has Toni Morrison done that in any of her other books, used things that we could call African motifs or African approaches?
Yes. On the eastern coast of the United States, you take Savannah, perhaps Charleston, South Carolina. I know it from an island called Sapelo. Off the coast of Georgia. It's now the last Gullah-speaking island, settled Gullah-speaking island on the Georgia coast. There is the story of the flying African, and I believe it's Drums and Ho. It was the H-O-E-D-R-U-M-S and Ho from, I probably have the collator's name wrong, but it came out in the 1930s, and there's a series of stories about the flying African. One of them, which takes place around St. Simon's Island, I mean, there are a variety of these, St. Simon's Island in Georgia, is the fact that the slaves, upon coming to the United States, resisted their placement in the United States, their captivity, of course, and never for a minute settled or resigned themselves to their fate in the United States, and that someone would come along and say the proper words, and the proper words would take them to the one version would take would allow would give them wings so they could fly back to Guinea, which was the name for West Africa. There's another story which Paula Marshall used in Praise Song for the Widow, which talks about Gullah landing, Igbo landing near Savannah. And that was supposed to be a tidal creek where upon a certain moment a boat would, excuse me, they would walk back to Africa. So this notion of flight, of empowering flight, coming from a folktale or series of folktales, yes, she has used before.
You're listening to Storylines Midwest, and we're talking today to John McCluskey about the book Beloved and about Toni Morrison. To join our conversation, you can call 866-255-2762. That's 866-255-2762. Mary is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Mary. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
Hello. What is your question?
Oh, I hear you talking about Beloved. I live here in Iowa City, and Iowa City was one of the stops on the Underground Railroad. And that article that was the basis of Beloved is in the Crisis magazine. I think it's 1923, and W.E.B. Du Bois was the editor then. And if you, it's a, you know, slavery is so much a part of Beloved, but if you slavery, if you stand outside of it, and you can, like, step outside of history, as Ishmael Reed says, it reads just like science fiction. The idea that a person didn't desire their own humanity and that this wasn't even a person. And it took me years to be able to read Beloved. It gave me chills, the idea that this mother would kill her child. I just couldn't settle down. And you had mentioned some more stories that she uses Africanist metaphor for. Tar Baby is a perfect example. I prefer Tar Baby to all of her stories.
Even Beloved.
Yes, because it just, the idea, I don't know, I guess because I'm a natural fighter. I got to fight everything. And the idea that this woman wouldn't fight no matter what and, you know, keep her child, it just upset me.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Well, John, can you tell us a little bit about Tar Baby since Mary brought that story up?
Wow, Tar Baby takes me back a bit.
There
is the resistance with the men at the end of that particular novel. I'm not remembering as perhaps as clearly as I should.
And that was Mary's point, I think. Yeah, it was that fight that's at the end. That's what I'm remembering, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it had perhaps some other kinds of issues early on, but I think it's been interesting to watch Morrison sort of reach toward Africa in her fiction, in at least several of her books. In poetry, the reach of African-American poets such as Robert Hayden and others over the years has been an exciting struggle to watch in poems like Middle Passage, which comes to mind most clearly. But with fiction writers, with novelists, the question is how to get the Africanity in, the whole sense of Africa, the whole sense of what is perhaps the most horrific, one of the most horrific chapters is what Morrison says there's an eerie silence about. And that is the Middle Passage, the trip over. Charles Johnson has attempted to do that in his novel of a few years ago. But there are still silences in African-American history that do still need to be filled. And I think all of them may not lend themselves to the triumphant ending. The Garner story, for example, is one which, and I'm glad to know this 1923 source. There was another source that Morrison and a co-editor used in a book called The Black Book some years ago, where it also appears from a Cincinnati church publication. But it's just, I was on the point of silence, is there's still so much there that needs to be done, but it may not necessarily be triumphant. James Allen McPherson, the short story writer, was here in town a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about one of the strengths of Afro-American expression. And I would assume he would take this from the comedy of Richard Pryor, for example, or to the blues forms. I assume he could also take this to people like Ralph Ellison. And that is, how do you bring together, where do you put the tragic vision of America? And he settled the tragic vision on the American African-American shoulders. That did not mean the story was a sad one. It meant the story was a complex one. And if you add humor, which a person like Ellison, for example, or some of the blues artists would, and some parts of Morrison, small parts of Morrison, then you have a very complex and rich literature which feeds on history at the same time it feeds on folk tales.
John, you just mentioned in passing the Garner story, and I don't think we'd actually named that yet this evening, so perhaps you could tell people what that is.
I believe that was the same. I hope I was on the same wavelength as the young woman who called from Iowa. And that's the story of, I believe it's Margaret Garner, who did indeed attempt to kill her child when they were going to take the child back into slavery, take the whole family back into slavery.
Right.
And incidents like this, of course, we hear from the captain's logs of slave ships where people would jump overboard, for example, in shark-infested waters in some places to avoid the New World.
That Margaret Garner story, interestingly enough, from my reading, in the 1850s, that was an enormous story in America. But after the Civil War and in the process of Reconstruction, that particular story seemed to have disappeared. Nobody paid a lot of attention to it like they did to, say, Dred Scott or something. The Garner story was almost too much to bear.
You're absolutely right.
You're listening to Storylines Midwest, and the number to call to join our conversation is 866-255-2762. Julie is on the line from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Julie.
Hi. Hi, Keith. Hi, Charity.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm so glad you mentioned Robert Hayden, another great Midwestern writer.
Yes.
I'm calling partly because Beloved is absolutely my favorite book, but also yesterday we went into Detroit to the dedication of the International Memorial to the Underground Railroad,
yeah, mm-hmm.
which was just an amazing event. So that there's one set of sculptures on the Detroit side and another on the Windsor side, and they were dedicated on the same day. But I was thinking, hearing your discussion, something that really, the whole event really brought home to me in a way that nothing else had before, which is there were so many descendants there of people who had been conductors on the Underground Railroad or had actually traveled it, including people whose families had gone to Ontario and stayed or gone to Ontario and come back or who had participated in one of the stations all throughout Michigan, you know, these trails from Adrian or Battle Creek and Ann Arbor all the way through. And this sense of the geography of these treks with family members coming from all of these places converging on this spot for this ceremony. It really it gave a sense of place, you know, to these stories and to this kind of trauma and you know, aspiration that was driving it. That I thought I knew quite a lot about the Underground Railroad, and I like to think I'm an academic. You know, I read these things, but there's nothing like actual ceremonies like the one that happened yesterday, I think, to really make it vivid.
Yeah, it's tremendously moving. Always is. Thank you. Thanks for calling, Julie. When she was talking about that, John, it hit me. There's also a lovely little African-American History Museum on the Canadian side, south of Windsor. It's not something we don't think about a lot as part of the history, but it's there, and it's very interesting.
Hmm. It's already up and running. It's been up and running.
Yeah, that one's been up for quite a while. Yeah, it's been up for a couple of decades, I think. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I hope that such ceremonies inspire and encourage family members to archive everything available to write these stories down and record them, and any oldest descendants in any family who can sort of project back to be recorded. It's very important to have ceremony, yes, but also to have those documents.
Well, John, I want to thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot. John McCluskey Jr. is a novelist and a professor of Afro-American Studies and English at Indiana University. For more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website at storylines.ala.org, or you can check out your local public library. Participating libraries have copies of the books, program schedules, and they also have discussion guides if you're interested in starting a Storylines book club. You're listening to Storylines Midwest.
Is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
Guide me, oh.